verses, text 4 and 5 of the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has outlined 20 qualities which are found in this material world, and he says that he is the cause of all of them. Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, is discussing each of these qualities one by one. We've been reading a particular section of the purport dealing with a particular quality, discussing that for a while and going on to the next. And in this way we have discussed the first four qualities, that is buddhi, meaning intelligence, jnanam, meaning knowledge, asammohaha, meaning freedom from doubt and delusion, and kshama, which means forgiveness and tolerance. And now we'll talk about the next quality, which is satyam, which is truthfulness. So please come to the section of the purport which begins with satyam on page 451. Have you all found that section of the purport? Quote, satyam, truthfulness, means that facts should be presented as they are for the benefit of others. Facts should not be misrepresented. According to social conventions, it is said that one can speak the truth only when it is palatable to others. But that is not truthfulness. The truth should be spoken in a straightforward way so that others will actually understand what the facts are. If a man is a thief, and if people are warned that he is a thief, that is truth. Although sometimes the truth is unpalatable, one should not refrain from speaking it. Truthfulness demands that facts be presented as they are for the benefit of others. That is the definition of truth. So this is something very practical and relevant for all of us in our day-to-day life, whether as devotees or as non-devotees. There are certain moral principles that must necessarily be followed. In any civilized society, there must be some basic moral codes. Otherwise, that human society is no better than animal society. The scriptures distinguish human society from animal society by saying that dharma or religion is present in human society. Srila Prabhupada many times speaks in this way. And he says that even some tribal group in some isolated place somewhere in the forest, even they have some kind of religion. Maybe they accept some powerful aspects of nature like the sun, the sky and so on as God, but there is some sense of obedience or some sense of accepting some higher authority and trying to worship and follow some kind of rules. So that is very intrinsic to human society. So this is the beginning of dharma. And these moral codes are called upadharma, sub-religious principles. They're not quite the essence of dharma, but when they are connected to the Supreme Lord, then they become the highest dharma. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto, we see the glories of Maharaj Parikshit being described. As the king travels around his kingdom, checking whether everyone is following dharma, whether everyone is happy, whether there are any miscreants who are creating a disturbance and who need to be punished, he comes across Kali personified. This age is Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel. and the personification of Kali was mistreating a bull who was personified dharma or personified religion. And it is symbolic in the sense that in Kali Yuga we see an all-out slaughter of religious principles, an assault on religion, on true religion. And Maharaj Parikshit, he arrested Kali immediately and threatened to kill him, and he banished him. And then he addressed the bull. The bull was basically injured in three legs, and he had one leg that was somewhat all right. And so he said, addressing the bull, Tapaha Shaucham Daya Satyam, these four things, Iti Pada Krite Kritaha, Dharma Anshay Trayo Bhagna Smaya Sangha Madaistava. He said, my dear bull, you are religion personified, and I can understand that Traya Bhagna Iti Pada, your three legs are injured, they're broken. And these three legs actually represent certain principles of religion, and now you have only one left. We can understand that the four legs of religion are tapaha, which means austerity, shaucham, which means cleanliness, daya, which means mercy, and ultimately there is satyam, which means truthfulness. Iti padaha krite kritaha. So in Krita Yuga or in Satya Yuga, religion was established by these four principles. In other words, these were the four legs of religion. These were the essential religious principles. But we see now that three of these legs have been broken or they're injured. Bhagnaha, Trayo Bhagnaha, so three legs have been broken, which represent three quarters of the principles of religion. And why have they been broken? Because of three things: Smaya, Sangha, and Madaihi. Smaya means pride, which destroys the first regulative principle. That means austerity. The second is Sangha, or lust, illicit connections with the opposite sex, which basically destroys shaucham or cleanliness. And the third is mada, which means intoxication, which destroys the third principle of daya or mercy. And now Parikshit Maharaj tells the bull, I can understand that you have only one leg, and you are somehow or the other hobbling on that leg, and here deceit is flourishing. And personified Kali, Kali comes from the word Kalaha, which means quarrel. So Kali Yuga is the age of quarrel. So the personified quarrel, taking advantage of the deceit that is now prevalent everywhere, is also attacking your fourth leg. Even truthfulness is under assault. So Srila Prabhupada explains that in the Satya Yuga, everyone was very virtuous, pious, religious, spiritual. They were all called Paramhansas. So religion was 100% followed. But as the ages progressed, everything reduced. In Treta Yuga it became 75%. In Dwapar Yuga it became 50%. And in Kali Yuga 25%. Only one leg, that is truthfulness, somewhat remaining. And we can see that even that is being attacked very much. Even Prabhupada says in a lecture sometime that in a small business deal, it was so easy to do business earlier. Everything went on faith. But now even if you give things in writing with stamps and seals and everything, still you have to go to court and you can't get anything even after that. So truthfulness has taken a beating. Lying has become rampant, commonplace. And Srila Prabhupada explains that all this form of modern advertising is also another form of lying. It's lying propaganda. It's presenting falsehoods. Apart from the verbal lies, the advertising propaganda of the commercial world the television and the movie industry, the speculation on the stock markets, risky fly-by-night business operations, wanting to make something out of nothing, gambling, lotteries, all this is flourishing now. And habitually people tell lies very easily. It's become a practice, a way of life. So Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing that it is important for a human civilization to actually follow the four regulative principles, these four principles of religion. They are the foundation on which real dharma is based. And in one of the purports in the first canto, Srila Prabhupada says, makes a very interesting statement. He says that the central point in pleasing Krishna is to be truthful. Of course, he has given a broader definition of what it means to be truthful. But to start with, at least, we should be truthful on the relative platform. Children should be trained from childhood not to speak lies. They should be pulled up when they lie, and they should be told to speak the truth, even if it means that one has to face the consequences of that, which may be bitter. Better to face the bitter consequences by accepting the truth rather than speaking a lie to avoid the results of something one may have said or done. But the result is that the lie gives us a far greater result in terms of suffering at a later stage. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita also varieties of punyas, pious activities, and varieties of sinful activities. And in the list of sins, lying is very much there, high on the top. Lying to others, which means not only speaking verbal lies, but deceit, presenting oneself to be what one is not, cheating, all these are forms of falsehood. So they go against the principles of truthfulness. So basic honesty is something that is very important. And even when we come to spiritual life, because there are so many dealings we have to have with people, if we have not cultivated a habit of being truthful in our earlier life before coming to Krishna consciousness, then it's likely we will continue that habit even as devotees. And that will cause so much havoc in our spiritual life. We should not underestimate the importance of sub-religious principles or basic morality. They serve as a very strong foundation on which our bhakti can be built up. Of course, one should not be overly attached to the moral principles to the expense of bhakti, otherwise what is the point? Because these moral principles are in the sattva guna, the mode of goodness. So by following them, one remains there if one doesn't take to the devotional service of the Lord. Because one has to ultimately rise beyond the three modes of nature and come to the transcendental platform of pure devotional service. So these moral principles, these four fundamental pillars of religion, that is austerity, cleanliness, mercy and truthfulness, must be seen in connection with Krishna. For example, austerities. People are doing austerities in the outside world for material purposes, but we should do it for Krishna. We are fasting on Ekadashis or on certain festivals. We rise early in the morning, take bath, and so on. So we do our austerities for Krishna's pleasure. Similarly, there is cleanliness. We clean ourselves not just physically, but also mentally. Physically, we make sure we take bath properly before coming for Mangalarti in the temple or before we go on the altar. There are so many rules and regulations in devotional service about keeping the body physically clean. When we go to a crematorium, we should not enter a temple before taking bath. These are rules we follow. Rupa Goswami has mentioned many of these things. And mentally we should be clean by chanting the holy name and so on. And as far as austerity mercy is concerned, we show mercy actually by preaching Krishna's message to everyone. And of course, by being kind to each other and not being harsh with each other. And finally, truthfulness. So truthfulness means that we should not just speak the relative ordinary truths of this world amongst each other and make that a habit, but we should also learn to speak about the absolute truth, which is the highest truth, that is Krishna and devotional service. We should not be attached to speaking mundane truths at the expense of Krishna conscious truths. We see in the story of Yudhishthira Maharaj and Dronacharya's passing away, the Yudhishthira Maharaj, being Dharmaraj, was very, very attached to the moral principles. Therefore he was called Dharmaraj. Never in his life had he spoken a lie. Not just had he not spoken a lie, he had not even spoken ambiguously. Ambiguously means that you speak in such a way that it could be yes, it could be no, it could be this, it could be that. They're playing safe, neither this way or that. But he was always very clear. He always spoke straightforward, whatever was to be spoken. So what happened was that Dronacharya, having been insulted and provoked by Duryodhana into fury to fight fiercely, created havoc in the Pandava army at one stage in the battle. And in one day he killed 50,000 soldiers rapidly, and there was no stopping him. Although all the Pandavas came forward, but Dronacharya was completely unstoppable. He was just whizzing through the army, and he was using his celestial weapons. At that time, Krishna called Arjuna and Bhima and said, you know, if you don't stop Drona now, then Drona is going to finish off your army in half a day. Just half a day more and the battle is going to be over. Dronacharya will plow through your army. So there's only one way. So long as Dronacharya's arms are raised with weapons, you cannot do anything to him. But you can only stop him or kill him if his arms are down with the weapons. And the only way to do that, or Arjuna, is to go and tell him that his son has died. His son Ashwatthama has died. You have to tell him a lie. Otherwise, there's no other way to kill him. At that time, Arjuna said, oh Madhava, I cannot do this. But Bhima had no inhibitions or hesitation. Immediately, he rose, took up his club. He went into a part of the Pandava army where there was one general whose elephant was named Ashwatthama. So he took the elephant and smashed the... He took his club and smashed the elephant to death. And then he ran to Drona and said, Ashwatthama is dead, Ashwatthama is dead, because Ashwatthama was Drona's son. Dronacharya was fighting, but when he heard this, immediately his limbs began to melt like sand in water. But then he reflected that Bhima is known to be capricious. He says many things out of anger and sometimes out of jest. So I don't believe that Ashwatthama could have died. So he continued fighting. And the destruction went on. At that time, some of the demigods appeared, the sages actually, his ancestors, like Bharadwaj was his father, and others, Vishwamitra, Vasishtha, they all appeared in the sky, and they said, Dronacharya, you are fighting unfairly because you are using celestial weapons against ordinary humans, and therefore you are killing so many things. It's not correct. So Dronacharya became a little concerned. At that time, he said, this is a signal. The sages, my ancestors, are saying this. And Bhima has said something. I can't trust Bhima so much, but let me go to Yudhishthira. He will never lie. That much I know. So I will get the facts as they are from Yudhishthira. Meanwhile, Krishna had already told Yudhishthira. And Yudhishthira was in a quandary. What to do now? If Arjun had refused to speak a lie, you can imagine what about Yudhishthira, who was known as the emblem, personification of Dharma. And then Krishna started preaching to him the necessity for lying. And Krishna said, you know, Yudhishthir, there are certain scriptural injunctions in which it is said that one can lie in certain situations, like when one's life is endangered, or in such situations. If you don't lie now, then your whole army will be destroyed. So you have to save the life of so many people. So for this reason, you must lie. And Krishna quoted some scriptural verses. And then Yudhishthira Maharaj was with a heavy heart. Then when Duryodhan very shortly came, Dronacharya came to him shortly. And Yudhishthira, he asked, has Ashwatthama, my son, died? Has Ashwatthama died? So Yudhishthira Maharaj replied, Ashwatthama has died. And then very softly he says, the elephant. Because he was feeling a heavy burden in his heart. So for the first time in his life, he was somewhere between lying and ambiguous. And it is said that till this point in time, in the battle, Yudhishthira Maharaj's chariot and his horses were moving a few inches above the ground, because he was so pious, that was the strength of his piety. And practically the chariot was flying. But the moment he spoke that, the horses and the chariot came to rest on the ground. And then the sages began to wonder why this has happened. And some sages felt it was because Yudhishthira spoke a lie. And some sages felt it was because Yudhishthira Maharaj hesitated to tell a lie at the instruction of Krishna. So therefore, in ordinary behavior, it is not good to tell a lie. It is sinful. But if Krishna personally comes and tells us, you tell a lie, then that is the truth for us. Then we should speak that lie very happily. But devotees sometimes stretch this principle a little too far. A couple of months ago, we had a life member from somewhere in Europe, an Indian gentleman, but he had been made a life member by somebody in some temple in the world, I forget which, maybe in India, some temple. And he called up from abroad and says, I'm arriving by such and such flight at Delhi airport. Please have me picked up at the airport and bring me here and arrange rooms for me and my family. I'm staying here for a week. So I said, well, you're most welcome to come. But we don't have provision for picking up all our life members from the airport because it's not possible. For your information, we have 11,000 members made only by Vrindavan temple all these years. And what speak of the other members made by other temples and all over the world. So he said, but when I was made a member, your devotees told me that at any airport in the world, wherever I go, Paris, London, anywhere, there will be a chauffeur-driven car to pick me up, and I'll be escorted, and I will be given gifts, and I'll get accommodation and prasadam, everything. So I said, well, I'm sorry, but it's not possible for us to send. So in this way, we see the devotees many times. This is one instance. Many times devotees for collecting donations or for making life members or for this or that. We are a little whimsical or a little liberal, shall we say, in the moral principles. But we should be very cautious, because we may say we're doing it for Krishna, but if there is any slight motive there, it has its reactions. And even otherwise, it is not a wise thing. I've mentioned before also that some devotees, they used to travel without tickets in the railway trains to distribute books, and it would cause difficulties. And sometimes devotees get arrested, taken to jail, and it's so much bad name for the institution that you have a Hare Krishna devotee, he has to go in front of a judge, and he has to go to jail. So it is always a better practice for devotees to follow these principles of basic morality, even in the service of Krishna, and only in very, very exceptional circumstances, when there is some direct indication from some very, very mature, advanced Vaishnava. It's not likely that we'll get direct instruction from Krishna like Yudhishthira did. So under very special circumstances, one may think of how these moral principles may be compromised for a higher service, for Krishna's good, for Krishna's pleasure. But otherwise, we should generally speak truthfully. If we don't have a facility to pick up the life member from the airport, we should say so. We should not promise things that we know we will not be able to deliver. So as devotees, we are taking the principles of morality one step higher by connecting it to Krishna. And therefore we should speak the truth, the spiritual principles. The truth has to be spoken, the falsehood has to be exposed. Today, what is the falsehood going on in the society? The falsehoods are that sense gratification is the goal of life. Sense gratification is real happiness. There is no God. Or even if there is a religion of God, it's meant for improving our material status in this world, and so on. So we have to expose this. Devotees have to be truthful and straightforward, as Prabhupada says here. That truthfulness means that facts should be presented as they are for the benefit of others. Facts should not be misrepresented. As a schoolboy, I remember hearing that famous story about the emperor having no clothes. I'm sure many of you have heard that story. The emperor had given his tailor some time to stitch a new set of clothes for him, and the tailor couldn't finish it in time, and he was very afraid of being killed. So then he thought of a ploy, and he told the emperor, "Here is your dress." There was no dress. He was just holding up his two fingers. "Here is your dress." "What dress?" "Yes, can't you see, my lord? Dress." And then he had coached up a few people so that they would also say, "Oh, what a wonderful dress." And when this happened, when many people said like that, the king started thinking maybe there was something wrong with him. Maybe his eyes, he had better get himself checked by the eye doctor, or there was something wrong. So he said, "All right." And he said, "Okay, now I will change and wear this new clothes." So he discarded his clothes that he was wearing, and the tailor gave him the new set of clothes. And then he put them on. He went through the motions of buttoning and everything. And he was a digambar. You know what's a digambar? Dig means the directions. Ambar means cloth or the sky. So it means he was clothed only by the directions or by the sky. But then he thought that, well, everyone's saying I have nice clothes. And then he went out for his inspection in the kingdom. And as he was walking down the streets, everybody was thinking, "My God, the emperor has no clothes." But then already many people had been saying, "Oh, the emperor is wearing such beautiful clothes." And everyone was feeling, if I don't say that, then I'll be killed. So everyone started appreciating the king for his wonderful clothes. "Oh, the emperor has such wonderful new clothes." Everyone was saying that. And the king was thinking, well, it must be true. And he was walking along majestically till there came along one small boy. And as you know, small children are born in this world to embarrass adults. They are born to make life miserable for adults, and to speak very uncomfortable things which adults don't like to hear. They come in at the wrong time, wrong place, and say the wrong things. So this little boy came forward and said, "The emperor has no clothes, the emperor has no clothes, ha ha ha," he was jumping up and down. And everyone was saying, "Keep quiet, keep quiet." But the boy couldn't be kept quiet, but the secret was out. Somebody had spoken the truth. Nobody dared to say it, and the king liked to believe that it was the truth, although he had a suspicion it wasn't true. But the small boy just spoke the truth. So as devotees, we have to be childlike, not childish, but childlike, which means innocent, to speak the truth. The truth is that sense gratification is a cause of misery. The truth is that we have to become pure devotees of the Lord, and that's the only way to be happy. So there are so many such wonderful truths that we learn from the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. We have to speak these sublime truths. People are hiding in illusion. They are like the ostrich, putting their heads in the ground, thinking that the reality of death will not come, the reality of suffering will not come, but it will come. So therefore we have to expose people to the reality that they see but still don't see. as we were mentioning the other day, pashyanna pina pashyati, that they see but still they don't see. So that is our job. Then Srila Prabhupada goes on to say that according to social conventions, it is said that one can speak the truth only when it is palatable to others, but that is not truthfulness. The truth should be spoken in a straightforward way so that others will understand actually what the facts are. If a man is a thief and if people are warned that he is a thief, that is truth. Although sometimes the truth is unpalatable, one should not refrain from speaking it. So Prabhupada is referring to this Subhashita, this proverb, which he also quoted many times in his lectures, which is Satyam Bruyat Priyam Bruyat, that if you speak the truth, and when you speak the truth, speak it pleasingly. Satyam Bruyat means speak the truth, Priyam Bruyat means speak it pleasingly. And the next part of the verse is Ma Bruyat Satyam Apriyam, don't speak truth unpalatably. So Prabhupada, he says, no, truth is truth. Even if it is unpalatable, it should be spoken. So he says this principle is according to social convention. It's there, it's a social norm in society. When you're living with people, we must sometimes accept. But we must still learn to speak the truth, even though it may be unpalatable. Now this is another point that is not a blanket permit, it's not a license for us to say in the name of truth anything and hurt people. One time I remember some years ago, one devotee came to me and he had some grudge in his heart against some senior devotee, very very senior devotee. So I asked, what happened? He said, you see, some years ago my father died and I went to this devotee. And I was very much grief-stricken because of my father's death. I was very attached to him. And I went to this devotee and I was expecting some words of solace. And when I went to him, as soon as I said that my father has died, the first thing he said is, and one day you are going to die. So, that was the way he was preaching. Well, it's not wrong. What he said was right. It's a fact. Yes, he would also die one day. But the point is that there was no need for him to have spoken harshly right away like that to a new devotee, someone who is just becoming a devotee. It took him several years to recover from that. So therefore, his faith was affected for so many years. It was a setback in his Krishna consciousness. So one has to speak the truth, but it's not that that's the only option. Speaking unpalatably is the last option. We should first try to present things nicely, and only when things come to a point where we have no option and for the benefit of the others we need to speak unpalatably, then we may do so. Let's give a simple example. When a person goes to a doctor, the doctor will first try to see that a surgery can be avoided. He will try to medically cure the person just by medicines. If it is possible medically, then he will not take the surgical alternative. However, when he finds that despite medical treatment, the situation has not improved, it's still grave, then he may adopt the surgical route. Or, if the patient has come to him at such a late stage that medicines cannot work now, surgery is the only alternative, then he will do surgery immediately. In the same way, depending on the circumstances, depending on the persons we are talking to, on the situation, on the time and so on, one may judge whether it's the right thing to do to speak unpalatably, even if it's the truth, or can I make do with speaking properly, nicely, pleasantly, and then if he accepts, it's fine. Or if things have come to a stage where an operation or a surgery is necessary, then yes, speak harshly. We see in the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he was so much against the Mayavadi principles, the principles that the living entity is God, that God has no form, that he would very, very severely decry or criticize these principles. But when he came to Varanasi, which is the headquarters of Mayavad philosophy, so to speak, he was criticized by the Mayavadi sannyasis there, led by Prakash Ananda Saraswati. And one of Mahaprabhu's followers, a Maharashtrian Brahmin who had settled down in Varanasi, was very keen that these sannyasis should stop criticizing Mahaprabhu, that they should one time just meet Mahaprabhu and understand his glories and become Vaishnavas. So somehow or other, Mahaprabhu agreed to the repeated requests of this Brahmana devotee. And he went to a meeting with these sannyasis. These sannyasis were sitting there on a raised platform with their dandas, grave as anything, shining. And it was a very sober, somber mood as he came there. As Mahaprabhu entered, he saw everyone sitting there, expressionless, stiff as a rod, Om, Shanti Om, sitting. And then Mahaprabhu came there, and immediately he took a very humble position. He sat on a lower place, at the place where people washed their feet upon entering the room. And he, in a very meek way, he went and sat there. And then he tuned on his Brahman effulgence to attract the Mayavadis. Prakash Ananda Saraswati was touched by the humility of Mahaprabhu. Immediately he rose and said, "Goswami, Goswami, my dear Goswami, please don't sit there. Come, come, sit with us, sit with us." And for this little service that Prakash Ananda Saraswati did to Mahaprabhu, he was delivered. And then Mahaprabhu began a conversation. The sannyasis asked him some questions, and Mahaprabhu replied. The tone in which Mahaprabhu spoke was very pleasing, very humble, very soft, and that won the heart of the sannyasis more than anything else. So it is not that Mahaprabhu just went there and just shot them all down and just fired them up. "Yes, you know, you're a rascal, you're, you're Mayavadis." No, he was very soft, very gentle. And because of his gentleness, he spoke the truth in such a gentle and pleasing way, the Mayavadis were converted on the spot, immediately. Of course, he spoke very, very perfect and powerful philosophy. And he spoke it very eloquently, in a very scholarly way. But ultimately, we can learn from this example that it's not our scholarship, it's not our philosophy, it's not our oratory and so on that is going to convince people to take to Krishna consciousness or even to advance in Krishna consciousness. It is ultimately how we say things. Our philosophy is a very personal philosophy. So truth may need to be spoken harshly, but that should be reserved in cases when palatably speaking the truth doesn't work, or when it is not the right thing to do. In the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear about Hiranyakashipu being very angry that his brother Hiranyaksha had been killed by Lord Vishnu in the form of Varaha. And before he embarked on his campaign to create havoc in the world, he went to console his mother and also the queens and sons of Hiranyaksha, his brother. And he saw them wailing and lamenting. And then he spoke sublime philosophy about the body and soul. Yes, even Hiranyakashipu was a scholar, just like Ravana. He spoke perfect philosophy about how one should not lament at the time of death, about providence, about the body being perishable, everything. He spoke perfect philosophy. And then he spoke the example, or he mentioned a story of how Yamaraj once took the form of a small boy to come and console and instruct the queens of a king called Suyagya who had died in the battlefield. The queens were grieving for the king on the battlefield, and they refused to release his body to be sent to the crematorium. At that time, their pitiful cries could be heard in Yamaloka, so Yamaraj came immediately. He took the form of the boy because he felt that people like hearing philosophy from a small child. They are fascinated by it. And also he understood that now the time had come to speak unpalatably. And therefore, if unpalatable truths are spoken by a child, then people don't take offense so much. So then when the boy came, that is Yamaraj came, he spoke to them about philosophy. But he also spoke a little harshly in between. He called them foolish, he called them weak-minded, and the queens liked it. They accepted the philosophy, they gave up their grief, and eventually the body of the king was cremated, and they awoke to self-realization. We see so many such examples in the scriptures. Even Vidura, for example, was often cautioning his brother Dhritarashtra. He was also admonishing Duryodhan sometimes. Initially he tried to do it lovingly, but it didn't happen. But when he spoke very, very strongly in the open assembly, Duryodhana was so infuriated that he basically threatened him with death. And he warned him that if he didn't leave the kingdom and the palace at this very moment with only his breath, then he would be killed at the next time, next moment. So Vidura left his bow and arrow at the doorstep, and immediately with a pained heart he departed, and he went on to places of pilgrimage, eventually meeting Uddhava, and that's described in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then again, after the battle of Kurukshetra had been fought, Vidura came back simply to deliver his older brother Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra was living in a pitiable condition. He was living at the shelter of those whom he had conspired to kill. And Vidura told him in privacy that you are living like an animal who is being fed by crumbs by a master like Bhima. Those very people whom you try to kill, you try to cheat, you try to take away their possessions, their kingdoms. You tolerated the insult to their queen, their wife, when she was disrobed or attempted to be disrobed in the assembly. And now you're living in their shelter and eating their salt. Shame on you. And look at your condition. You're old, you're not, as it is, you're blind from birth, and now you can't even hear. You're coughing up mucus, your back is bent over. So now you must come with me and understand the truth of life. And in the middle of the night, Vidur took away Dhritarashtra into the forest and made Dhritarashtra's life perfect. So Vidur spoke harshly to Dhritarashtra, even to Duryodhana, out of love, wanting their benefit. As Prabhupada says here, that facts should be presented as they are for the benefit of others. So that should be our motivation, that even if we have to speak harshly, it should be for the benefit of others. We should not speak harshly out of a sense of injured ego or for any other selfish motive. Similarly, we see in the case of Vibhishan, the younger brother of Ravana, when the monkey army and the bear army accompanying Lord Ramachandra had assembled on the shore of the ocean, and only the sea was separating the army from Lanka, the news reached Ravana. Of course, by that time Hanuman had already come into Lanka, and he had ravaged Lanka, he had burnt Lanka, and he had killed many, many powerful generals, till Indrajit captured him, or till Hanuman agreed to be captured by Hanuman. So then Ravana had called together an assembly, and many of his generals were boasting, they were bragging of how powerful they were and how powerful Ravana was, and that there was no need to be afraid of Lord Ram's army. Who is this human? He's just a human being. What can a human being do? And we are Rakshasas, and we are much more powerful. And you, O King Ravana, you have terrorized the whole universe, so you have no need to worry. At that time, Vibhishan spoke up pleasingly but truthfully, and he said, no, You must not accept this path because it is a path of destruction. An intelligent person should know when to use physical prowess. Only when the other means of subduing others are exhausted does one come to this point. In the art of diplomacy, there are four things: Sam, Dan, Dand, Bhed. When you're dealing with an enemy, one thing you can do is to try to pacify him with sweet words. Another thing you can do is Dan, which means bribe him, give him a gift. Another thing you can do is Bhed, to divide the enemy faction so that they fight with each other, so that now your fight becomes easier. And ultimately, if nothing works, then Danda, then you have to resort to violence. So Vibhishan said, the time has not come. Return, Sita Devi, I beseech you, O King. Don't you know how powerful Lord Ram is? He has divine power. Don't you see the way he destroyed thousands of our brothers in Janasthan? And don't you know the prowess of Hanuman, who leaped over the sea? And just look at his vast army. So it is not possible to get victory over Ravana. So please return Sita to Lord Ram. Ravan didn't like it. He walked out. Then again the next day, Vibhishan went up to him privately when he was surrounded only by his few ministers and counselors, and he spoke the same things. And he said, my dear king, I can only see inauspicious omens everywhere. Ever since you kidnapped Sita, just see, even the sacrificial fires are not being lit properly here. There are sparks coming from the sacrificial flames. There are insects in the materials that are offered into the oblations, as oblations into the fire. There are reptiles in the kitchen. There are reptiles at the sacrificial places and in the educational places. All the animals are making strange sounds. And there are so many such symptoms in nature by which we can understand something very inauspicious has happened and will happen. So please desist from this path of destruction. Please permit us all to live peacefully with our family and friends here in Lanka. Return Sita immediately. But Ravan said, I have nothing to fear. There is no way I will return Sita to Lord Ram. The next day again Ravan called his commanders. And his commanders were speaking very boastfully. Vibhishan spoke up yet again. And he was still pleading. He was still speaking very palatably, very sweetly. His tone was not harsh, but he was speaking truthfully. And after many of the generals were speaking harshly, finally Indrajit, the son of Ravan, rose. And he spoke very harshly to Vibhishan. He said, you are a shame on our dynasty. You are the only one in our whole race who is a coward. And he went on speaking in this way. And at that time, Vibhishan spoke up. And for the first time, he started speaking unpalatably. And he said, Indrajit, you are just a small boy. You are inexperienced. And he says, you do not know the prowess of Lord Ram. You are speaking as a son of my brother, but actually you are talking like his enemy out of your ignorance and inexperience. You are dull-witted, evil-minded, immature, unintelligent, foolish. So do not be the cause of the destruction of the whole dynasty. Indrajit was furious. Then Ravana spoke up. And Ravana said that the only reason you are still alive is because you are my brother. Otherwise, you are simply envious of me, I know that. It is the nature of kinsfolk in this world to be envious of their kin. Because I am praised all over the world, so you cannot tolerate this. So you have come in the guise of my brother as a friend, but you are actually my enemy. And Ravana went on speaking. So although Vibhishan had spoken very strongly, when he found that it was of no avail, then he begged leave from Ravana. He departed. He rose into the sky and then crossed the sea and approached Lord Ram and took shelter of him. And Lord Ram accepted him. So we see that Vibhishan was actually the well-wisher of Ravana and Indrajit. And he told Ravana a very important thing. He He said, only your friends will speak harshly to you and speak the truth. There are many flatterers, O king, who will come and tell you pleasant truths, but they actually deceive you. So this is an important instruction for us, that a real friend is one who will sometimes come and tell us something that we may not like to hear, but which is truth and which is for our good. A flatterer may come and praise us for some purpose of his or her own. So the principle of speaking the truth, palatably or unpalatably according to the situation, is there. Srila Prabhupada also many times spoke very, very pleasingly to people. If you see all the videos of how Prabhupada dealt with important guests, even scientists, he always dealt so respectfully. He spoke so courteously to all of them. He didn't compromise the philosophy. He spoke the truth, but he spoke pleasingly. But sometimes he was like a Singha Guru. He was like a lion, and he would speak very harshly and very strongly because he wanted to get a point across. Sometimes he would call a scientist a fool to his face, and he could get away with it because he was Prabhupada. But we should not imitate Srila Prabhupada. So we have to be very courteous to everyone we preach to and we talk to, and try to speak the truth for the benefit of everyone. Before we speak, we should always consider whether what we are speaking is the truth, whether it is necessary to speak it, even if it is the truth, and if it is necessary to speak it, is it beneficial for the person we are going to speak to, for that person? Even if something is true, if it's not beneficial to the person we are speaking to, why speak it? Suppose some devotee has had some moral difficulty somewhere, and we go and approach another devotee. Do you know, XYZ devotee, this happened? It's the truth. So it's the truth, but is there a need to talk about it? Is it beneficial to the other devotee to talk about it? It's not. Then why talk about it? So unless, as Prabhupada says here, unless something is beneficial to others, we need not speak it. That's the implication. So the motivation for speaking truth, the manner of speaking the truth, everything is also important. So this is a very important quality, satyam, that Krishna has outlined here. There's much more to be said, but we'll stop here. Many, many wonderful stories like this in the scriptures. But we'll stop here at this time. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. Life. The comment here is that it is said that a lie can be spoken when it is not harmful and when it is said to save life. But we must also accept this with caution. We should not think again that it's a blanket permit for us to just, because it's not harmful, we just develop a habit of speaking lies. Then it becomes a habit, and we will speak it even if it is harmful, by force of habit. And we may think something is not harmful, but it may actually be harmful. We don't know. So why take refuge of that principle? And also, in order to save life, yes, but that is an extreme situation. How many of us are faced with that situation in our lifetime? Very few occasions, I'm sure. So it is always a better principle to be truthful. Any other questions? Yes, Mataji.
Prabhupada also used to say, in certain cases, he said, I can say, you can't say. Old men and small children can often say things which
others can't. Yes. Dealing with. Yes, the comment is that Prabhupada said sometime that I can do things that you cannot do. And I can say it, but you should not say it. that there's sometimes old people and children can say things and get away with it, and others can't. And also a lot depends on the relationship that the speaker has with the audience. Any other question or comment? Yes, somebody please. Yes, Mataji?
Once I had a very bad situation. I didn't know how to react. One devotee, she was my friend, and she had big problems with Hare Krishna consciousness. And her spiritual master asked me, what is the problem? And she said, please don't tell anything. I didn't know how to react. That's why I was thinking very long. And then I said to the spiritual master, and when she asked me, did I say something, I said, no. So, tell me, did I react right?
Well, everything is so subtle and delicate and subjective. We cannot make a definitive answer, yes, it was right or not right, but we should just take the general principles. Yes, if the situation was so grave that for that devotee's welfare it was necessary to inform the spiritual master so that he could take proper corrective action, and it was necessary and helpful for that devotee, then yes, it was the right thing to do. But if it was not something important or not something really significant, it was not necessary for the welfare of that devotee or something, then there was no need to say. You respect somebody's confidence. The idea is that what is helpful and beneficial for that person. Our motivation should be right. Alright, so thank you very much. We'll stop here. We could do only one quality today. So let's see how it goes tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna.